Hello, good day to you. My name is Edmund Tena Anulochu. Welcome to Lord You, Company Law. Straight to business. Let's talk about meetings. Now, without members, there can be no company. General meetings are the means by which members exercise their powers. The Companies Act has detailed and stringent rules relating to members' meetings. There are two kinds of meetings: general meetings and then class meetings. Now, all members of the company are eligible to attend general meetings, and resolutions passed here are binding on all members as well as the company itself. Now, general meetings are open to all members of the company regardless of the class of membership they hold. However, class meetings are held for special classes of people, such as preference shareholders or equity shareholders. Usually, class meetings are convened to assent to alterations to the rights of the class under the Constitution and to assent to mergers or arrangements that affect the class. Now, this audio will focus more on general meetings. There are two kinds of general meetings: annual general meetings and extraordinary general meetings. Now, resolutions are also discussed, and these two are of two types: ordinary resolutions and special resolutions. Now, the annual general meetings, or AGM, shall be held every year, and it shall be designated as such in the notices calling it. That is section 157. Section 157 says, 1571, except as provided in subsection 4, a company shall A, in each year hold a general meeting as the annual general meeting of the company in addition to any other meetings in that year, and B, specify the meeting as the annual general meeting in the notice calling the meeting. 1572, not more than 15 months shall elapse between the date of one annual general meeting and the next. 1573. If a company holds the first annual general meeting within 18 months of incorporation, the company is not required to hold the annual general meeting in the year of incorporation or in the following year. 4. The annual general meeting shall be held not earlier than 21 days after the financial statement, the consolidated financial statement, and the report of the directors and auditors on the financial statements of the company have been dispatched to members and debenture holders of the company in accordance with section 128, and the financial statement and report shall be laid before the annual general meetings for consideration. 5. If the auditors of the company and the members of the company entitled to attend and vote at an annual general meeting agree in writing that an annual general meeting shall be dispensed with in any year, it shall not be necessary for that company to hold an annual general meeting that year. 6. If the annual general meeting is not held in accordance with subsection 5, the registrar may, on a motion by the registrar or on the application of an officer or a member of the company, call or direct the calling of an annual general meeting of the company and may give the ancillary or consequential directions that the registrar thinks fit, including directions modifying or supplementing in relation to the venue, calling, holding, and conducting of that meeting, the operation of A, subsection 1, section 159, B, paragraphs 1 to 3 of the 8th schedule, C, paragraphs 8, 9, 12. Now, this goes on and on, but let's go to subsection 7. Where a meeting held in pursuance of subsection 6 is not held in the year in which the default in holding the annual general meeting of the company occurred, the meeting so held shall be treated as the annual general meeting for that year and shall not be treated as the annual general meeting for the year in which the meeting is held, unless at that meeting the company resolves that it shall be so treated. 8. Where a company passes a resolution pursuant to subsection 5 or 7, a copy of the resolution shall within 28 days of the passage of the resolution be forwarded to the registrar for registration. 9. If an annual general meeting of the company is not held in accordance with A, subsection 1, B, compliance with the directions of the registrar under subsection 6, or compliance with subsection 4, 7, or 8 of this section, the company and every officer of the company that is in default is liable to pay to the registrar an administrative penalty of 150 penalty units. Now, let's look at the interesting case of Eshen and Poku. The plaintiff sued for a declaration that the AGM was improperly convened and that the elections held, which purportedly resulted in the elections of various persons as national officers of the Ghana Hoteliers Association, were a violation of Section 1492 of the now repealed Act. They also prayed the High Court for an injunction restraining the defendants from holding themselves out as national officers of the association. They contended that the documents listed in Section 1241 of the Act were not available for the consideration at the AGM, and therefore the elections conducted and other businesses transacted thereat were invalid. Lutrot J. rejected the plaintiff's position and argued that nothing in Act 179 shows that the holding of an AGM or to the holding of elections, while conceding, Lutrot J. rejected a plaintiff's position and argued at page 578 that nothing in Act 179 shows that the consideration of the accounts, directors reports, etc. is a condition precedent to the holding of an AGM or to the holding of elections. Whilst conceding that Section 1497 of the Estoile Act 179 made it a criminal offense not to comply with the section, the learned trial judge nevertheless said, "I see nothing showing that a meeting held without the consideration of the reports and accounts is no meeting." In other words, that is null and void. The learned trial judge referred to the then Section 1621, which permitted a director, member, or the registrar to apply to court to order a meeting of the company to be called and held and conducted in such manner as the court thinks fit, and continued thus. He said, "The point I wish to make is that this section also, quite apart from Section 150, which empowers directors to call for extraordinary general meetings, would all show that an AGM itself is not invalidated because all the relevant reports and documents were not laid before it. In my view, therefore, the resolutions that the elections be held in spite of the fact that the accounts have not been considered is null and void. Indeed, the elections are independent of any other matters to be considered at an AGM, and the sole ground that the accounts were not gone into would not invalidate the elections." Now, let's go to extraordinary general meeting. An extraordinary general meeting is a general meeting other than the annual general meeting. It may become necessary to hold an EGM, which is an extraordinary general meeting, because an important and urgent matter has come up for members to input a decision on a matter, and which cannot wait until an annual general meeting, which may be scheduled several months away, or because the agenda for the AGM is already cluttered with its ordinary business and will be inappropriate to add other businesses. Now, the extraordinary general meetings are invariably held to discuss emergencies or major threats to the company, or to pass special resolutions such as relating to amendment or alteration of the company's constitution, that is in Section 30, change of the company's name, which is Section 21(4), alter the authorized object or business of the company, which is Section 20, when it is effecting an arrangement on merger, Section 238, or even voluntarily winding up the company by way of private liquidation, Section 276. Now, directors may be removed at any time at any general meeting by an ordinary resolution, Section 1761. EGMs are used not infrequently to remove directors from office. Now, let's go to Section 158 of Act 992, Extraordinary General Meetings. 1581 says, "An extraordinary general meeting may be convened by the directors whenever the directors think fit. 2. If at any time they are not within the Republic sufficient directors capable of acting to form a quorum, a director may convene a meeting. 3. An extraordinary general meeting of a private company may be requisitioned in accordance with Section 299, and an extraordinary general meeting of a public company may be requisitioned in accordance with Section 324. Now, let's go to Section 299, which gives provision on the extraordinary general meeting of a private company. It says, requisitioning extraordinary general meetings of a private company, Section 299, Act 992. 1. The directors of a private company, despite a provision in the constitution of that private company, shall duly convene an extraordinary general meeting of the company on the requisition of A. 2 or more members of the company or a single member holding not less than 1/10 of the shares of the company, or B. In the case of a company limited by guarantee, 1/10 of the total voting rights of the members of the company. 2992. The requisition shall state the nature of the business to be transacted at the meeting and shall be signed by the requisitionist and sent to or delivered at the registered office of the company. 3. If the directors do not within 7 days from the 7 days from the date of receipt of the requisition at the registered office of the company, proceed duly to convene a meeting for a date not later than 28 days after the receipt of the requisition, the requisitionists or any of them may themselves convene a meeting, but a meeting so convened shall be held within 4 months from that date. 4. The reasonable expenses incurred by the requisitionist by reason of the failure of the directors to duly convene a meeting shall be repaid to the requisitionist by the company, and the sum of money so repaid shall be retained by the company out of the fees or other remuneration of the directors who were in default. 5. For the purposes of this section, the directors have not proceeded duly to convene a meeting if they do not, within 7 days after the receipt of the requisition at the registered office, cause notices of the meeting to transact the business specified in the requisition to be given in accordance with paragraphs 1 to 3 of the 8th schedule. This is self-explanatory. Now let's go to extraordinary general meetings of public companies. 324. Section 324, Act 992. 1. The directors of a public company, despite anything in the constitution of that company, shall, on the requisition of members of the company holding not less than 1/20 of the shares of the company, or in the case of a company limited by guarantee, members of the company representing not less than 1/20 of the total voting rights of the members of the company, forthwith proceed duly to convene an extraordinary general meeting of the company. 3242. The requisition shall A. state the nature of the business to be transacted at the meeting, and B. be signed by the requisitionist and sent to or deposited at the registered office of the company. 3. The requisition may consist of several documents in the like form, each signed by one or more requisitionists. 4. If the directors do not, within 28 days from the date of receipt of the requisition at the registered office of the company, proceed duly to convene a meeting for a date not less than 28 days after the receipt, the requisitionists or any of them may themselves convene a meeting, but a meeting so convened shall not be held after the expiration of 4 months from that date. 5. The reasonable expenses incurred by the requisitionist by reason of the failure of the directors duly to convene a meeting shall be repaid to the requisitionist by the company, and the sum of money so repaid shall be retained by the company out of the fees or other remuneration of any of the directors who were in default. 6. For the purposes of this section, the directors have not proceeded duly to convene a meeting if they do not, within 28 days of the receipt of the requisition at the registered office, give notices of the meeting to transact the business specified in the requisition in accordance with paragraph 1 to 3 of the 8th schedule. Now, let's look at the case of PNC Telecom PLC and Thomas. Now, a letter sent by fax constituted a validly deposited notice to convene an extraordinary general meeting under section 368 of the Companies Act 1985. The Vice Chancellor noted that by the time the Electronic Communications Act 2000 enabled specific modifications to be made to authorize communications by electronic means under existing statute, including the Companies Act, some of such modifications had been made, but not in respect of section 368. Counsel before him had been unable to indicate the basis on which some of the provisions had been signed out for amendment, but others not. The 2000 Act could not be regarded as designed to introduce fax as a permitted means of communication, for that had been done on a case-by-case basis over the preceding 30 years or so. So the facts of the case are that following service of a notice on a company by fax under provisions of section 368, an extraordinary general meeting's of members' requisition, which is, was sent by fax, the company applied to the court for relief on the basis that the requisition by fax was not a proper deposit at the registered office as Section 368 requires. The company contended that to be valid, a requisition under Section 368 had to be deposited at the registered office of the company, either in person or by post. The court dismissed the application and referred to the Companies Act 1985, Electronic Communications Order 2000, that specifically allows electronic communications to be accepted as well as communication by post. In addition, the fax had been in use for a long time and no one had been disadvantaged or misled by the fax transmission. There was no reason why such a transmission should not be regarded as a valid deposit under Section 368. Now let's go quickly to power of the court to order meetings, Section 1621. If for a good reason it is impracticable to call a meeting of a company in a manner in which meetings of that company may be called, or to conduct the meetings of the company in the manner prescribed by the constitution of the company, the court may, on the application of a director, a member of the company, or the registrar, order a meeting of the company to be called, held, and conducted in the manner that the court considers fit. 1622. Where that order is made, the court may give an ancillary or consequential direction that the court considers expedient. 3. A meeting called, held, and conducted in accordance with the order is, for the purpose of this act, a meeting of the company duly called, held, and conducted. We still refer to the cases of Eshen and Poku. Now let's go to convening the general meeting. Now, general meetings may be convened by the following. Directors. So this is a normal case. Directors may convene meeting suo motu. Suo motu meaning on its own motion, or where a government agency acts on its own cognizance. So the directors may convene a meeting suo motu, or upon members' requisition. By convention, it is the directors who fix the date for the AGM, and they may convene extraordinary general meetings at any time that they deem fit. Now, members may also convene meetings. When the directors fail to convene a general meetings, despite being duly filed and appropriate requisition given, the requisitionists may convene the meeting themselves. The registrar also may convene a meeting. When an AGM is not held in the normal course, the registrar suo motu, or on application of any member or member or officer of the company, may call or direct the calling of an AGM and give ancillary or consequential directions as deemed fit. This is in Section 1576. The court may also convene a meeting. If any reason is impracticable to call or conduct a meeting of the company in a manner prescribed by the constitution of the act, any director or member of the company or registrar may apply to the court to order a calling, holding, and or conduct of a meeting in such a manner as the court deems fit. This is in Section 162 that we just read. Now, in Edrix Mining and Minerals Limited and Ashanti Goldfield Company Limited, the applicant succeeded in getting a high court order directing the defendant company to hold an EGM within 3 weeks of the order for the purpose of passing ordinary resolutions for the election of a new board of directors and for the removal of the existing one and for other relief. The court was satisfied that it was impracticable either otherwise to convene an EGM, hence its order, Justice Richard Apalu stated. He said, a shareholder has expressed reservations about how competently a company he sunk his money in is being run, and I believe he ought to be heard and given the appropriate forum to redress his concerns. That forum is, in my view, is the EGM. According to the applicants, it is this same board that is handling the crisis, and since they claim they are competent, the directors may not be too keen to convene an EGM. In any case, the directors may convene an EGM at all as provisions may not convene an EGM at all as provisions have been made for an AGM on 26 April 2000. In my view, as a distressed company requiring assistance now and urgently, Ashanti may not be Ashanti as known today by 26 April 2000 if the present crisis continues without a shift in policy. Okay, now the directors must decide on the place and time for the meeting, and whilst doing this must act in good faith. Now, in the case of Smith and Paringa Mines Limited, the board of directors gave notice of a general meeting and later desired to adjourn by subsequent notice. It was held that the board of directors did not have such power. Now, let's go straight to notice of meetings. Notice of meetings shall be given to all members of the company, every person upon whom ownership of a share devolves by reason of his being a legal representative, receiver or trustee in bankruptcy of a member or directors and the current auditor of the company. Now, meetings are in the normal course required to be convened after giving all the persons entitled to notice at least 21 days notice in writing. That is in the 8th schedule, paragraph 1b. However, in the case of a special resolution for voluntary liquidation of the company, 7 days notice in writing will suffice. Now, the above notice periods are the minimum requirements imposed by the Act, as we may already have seen. The company's constitution may stipulate a longer, not a shorter notice. This is in paragraph 1c of Schedule 8. Nevertheless, a meeting that is convened in contravention of the minimum notice period shall be deemed to have been a regular called if it is an AGM and all members entitled to attend and vote to ratify the short notice, or if it is an EGM and a majority of the holders of the 95% of the shares with rights to attend and vote ratify the short notice. Now, let's read the 8th schedule. 1. Paragraph 1. A. Meetings other than adjourned meetings shall be convened by notice in writing to the persons who are, under subparagraph F, entitled to receive notice of general meetings. B. Subject to subparagraph C and D, at least 21 days notice, or in the case of a special resolutions under section 2 of the body's corporate official liquidations act 1963 at 180, 7 days notice exclusive of the day on which the notice is served but inclusive of the day for which notice is given shall be given. C. The registered constitution of a company may provide for a period of notice longer but not shorter than that specified in subparagraph B. D. A meeting of a company shall, although it is called by shorter notice than that specified in subparagraph B or in the registered constitution of the company, be deemed to have been duly called if it is so agreed. I. In the case of meeting called as general meeting by the members entitled to attend and vote at that general meeting, and II, in the case of any other meeting by majority in the number of the members having a right to attend and vote at the meeting, which is a majority holding not less than 95% of the shares, given a right to attend and vote at the meeting, or in the case of a company limited by guarantee, by 95% majority in number of the members. E. Where the members are entitled to vote only on some resolutions to be moved at the meeting and not on others, those members shall be taken into account for the purposes of subparagraph D in respect of the former resolutions and not in respect of the later. F. The persons entitled to receive notice of the general meetings are I. Member. II. Person on whom the ownership of a share devolves by reason of that person being a legal personal representative, receiver or a trustee in bankruptcy of a member, II, director of the company, and IV, auditor for the time being of the company. Now, in Tiensen and Henderson, there's a principle that stands for the proposition that notice convening a meeting must contain sufficient details as to place, time, and subject matter of the meeting to enable the person entitled to notice of the meeting make a properly informed decision whether or not it is in his own interest to attend the said meeting. In this case, the company, Violet Consolidated Gold Mining Company Limited, faced difficulties and it convened meetings for shareholders to consider various alternative schemes for reconstruction. Three directors had a very strong financial interest in the schemes that was in fact approved by this fact, but this fact was not disclosed in the meeting convening them in the notice convening the meeting, although the circular said that
Guarantors in the proposed scheme were to have a right of call or share option of 50,000 of the company's new shares. The circular did not say that the said directors were also guarantors. The plaintiff successfully sued for a declaration that the resolution was invalid. Kekewich J said, the shareholder must be regarded as a man of ordinary prudence. Treating it as a commercial matter, he has invested his money in this company. The company is in difficulties and reconstruction is necessary. And what he has to consider when the notice and circular come to him is whether on the whole this is the best thing that can be done. He is either to vote himself in person or by proxy, or he is to leave it to the majority to decide. It seems to me impossible to exclude the matters which he ought, as a prudent man, to consider. The question whether some of his directors may be remunerated by means of this call or shares, the man I am protecting is not the dissentient, but the absent shareholder, the man who is absent because, having received and with more or less care looked at this circular, he comes to the conclusion that on the whole he will not oppose the scheme but leave it to the majority. I cannot tell whether he would have left it to the majority to decide if he had known the real facts. Let's also look at the case of Prudential Assurance and Newman Industries. Now, let's look at accidental failure to give notice. The accidental omission to give notice of a meeting to, or the non-receipt of notice of a meeting by, a person entitled to receive notice shall not invalidate the proceedings at the meeting. This is in Schedule 8, Paragraph 4. And the cases to look at is Muscle White and Muscle White and Sons Limited, Re West Canada Colliers Limited. Because of time, we can't read these cases. Now let's look at service of notice of meetings. Paragraph 3A. Notice may be given by the company to a member or director personally, or by I sending it through the post address to the member or director at the registered address of the member or director, or leaving it with a member or director with a person, leaving it for the member or director with a person apparently over the age of 16 years at the address, or II sending it to the member or director through electronic means. B. Notice may be given to the joint holders of a share by giving the notice to the joint holder named first in the register of the members in respect of the share. C. Notice may be given to a person on whom ownership of a share has devolved by reason of that person being legal representative, receiver or trustee in bankruptcy of a member personally, or I by sending the notice through the post address to that person by name, II by the title of representatives of the deceased or receiver or trustee of the bankrupt, or III by any like description at the address supplied for the purpose by that person, or IV by leaving the notice for that person with a person apparently over the age of 16 years at the address, or V until that address has been supplied, by giving the notice in a manner in which the same might have been given if the death, receivership, or bankruptcy had not occurred. Paragraph 3D. Where a notice is sent by post, service is effected by properly addressing, prepaying, and posting a letter containing the notice, and is considered to have been effected at the expiration of 48 hours after the letter containing the notice is posted. E. The letter need not be registered, but where it is sent to an address outside Ghana, the letter shall be dispatched by airmail. Now, let's look at circulating documents for members. Now, the Act 992 encourages meaningful participation of members at meetings. One such step is in this direction is the machinery of circulating members' proposed resolutions and other statements to the entire membership of the company and to all others entitled to notice of meetings in advance of those meetings. Now, let's look at paragraphs 5 and 6 of the 8th schedule of Act 992, circulating of resolutions and supporting circulars of members. 5A. A company shall, at the expense of the company, on the request in writing of a member entitled to attend and vote at a general meeting, include in the notice of that general meeting notice of a resolution which may properly be moved and is intended to be moved at that meeting, and at the like request, include that notice a statement of not more than 500 words with respect to the matter referred to in the proposed resolution or any other business to be dealt with at that meeting. B. If the proposed resolution is not passed at that meeting, the resolution or one substantially to that effect shall not be moved at a general meeting within 3 years unless I, directors otherwise agree, or II, request within 3 years is supported in writing by members of the company representing not less than 1/20 of the total voting rights of the members having at the date of the request a right to vote on the resolution to which the request relates. C. For the purposes of subparagraph A, a company is not bound to give notice of a resolution or to circulate statement unless the written request or request signed by the member or members concerned, together with the resolution and statement, are deposited at the registered office of the company, not less than 6 weeks before the meeting. D. If after the documents have been deposited, a general meeting is called for a date not more than 6 weeks after the deposit, the documents shall be deemed to have been properly deposited. Now let's look at paragraph 6, circulation of circulars of members. 6A. At the request in writing of a member entitled to attend and vote at a general meeting, a company shall, unless a company otherwise resolves, but at the expense of that member, circulate to members of the company a statement of not more than 1,000 words with respect to a business to be dealt with at that meeting. B. The statement shall be circulated to members of the company in a manner permitted for service of notice of the meeting and for so far as practicable, at the same time as notice of the meeting, or if that is impracticable, as soon as possible after the giving of the notice of the meeting. C. A company is not bound to circulate the statement unless I, the written request signed by the member concerned, together with the statement, is deposited at the registered office of the company not less than 10 days before the meeting, and II, there is also deposited with the request a sum of money reasonably sufficient to meet the expenses of the company in giving effect to the request. Now let's look at attendance at meetings. Despite a provision in a registered constitution, that's in section 7, okay, paragraph 7 of the 8th schedule. A. Despite a provision in the registered constitution of a company to the contrary, the following persons are entitled to attend a general meeting of the company. I. Each member of the company. II. Each director of the company. III. The company secretary. And IV. Each auditor for the time being of the company. B. For the purposes of subparagraph A, I. If the constitution of a company so provides, a member is not entitled to attend unless the calls or other sums of money presently payable by that member in respect of shares in the company have been paid. And II. A member who is a holder of preference shares only is not entitled to attend if the right to do so is validly suspended in accordance with section 52. Subparagraph C. Subparagraph B does not preclude any other person from attending a general meeting with the permission of the chairperson of the meeting. Now, we will end here and go on with the next module on the legal aspects of the procedures at meetings. Thank you very much.